Deborah McGregor, so principal investigator of the Indigenous Environmental Justice Project, and you're listening to a podcast series that was recorded on February 10th at York University on the Canadian state and the Wet'suwet'en people. In this episode, you'll be listening to Hilary McGregor. So Hilary McGregor is a student at Georgian College in the Anishinaabewin program and has worked on and developed land-based and language activities for youth. So his reflections speak to his understanding of reconciliation. Reconciliation has come up and actually been challenged quite vigorously, and with many critics saying it's pretty well out the door and out the window by just the way the state is behaving in relation to the Wet'suwet'en people. So he speaks to his understanding about reconciliation and how it's possible or not possible in this particular situation. And this is based on also critiques. There's been strengths and weaknesses in terms of media coverage in relation to this, depending on people's level of understanding. And this particular issue brings out all kinds of different layers of history, unresolved relationship type entanglements, I guess, between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people. So Hilary's reflections focus a lot on how he understands reconciliation and what's needed to achieve that in light of this particular situation.
Ani, Bojo, Ninaga Sang Dijnakaz, Hilary Nda Jaganashin Nozwin, Makwado Dem, Wa Skinaga Donjaba, Journal Dinda, Miigwechuriak Kinadin Wendaganak Panagi Benishnabemwat, Gasha Maba, Giwin Baki Bijayan, Mampi Nongo. So I'm Hilary, Bear Clan from Birch Island. That's my mom. She told me I was coming here today. it wasn't a question. And I thanked all my relations who came before me who held on to the language so that I might learn it now. I currently work at Indigenous Sport Wellness Ontario. I'm a youth coordinator there. I've been working on a youth leadership program for about 3 years now. I'm also at Georgian College taking Anishinaabemwin to help me with some of that youth work. I think in order to understand some of our laws, our teachings, it's important to have an understanding of language because our worldview is in there. So it provides a little bit more depth in our understanding of some of the culture and some of the teachings and knowledge that youth are looking for today. So that's kind of the background I'm coming at this from. I don't know a lot about what's going on in BC, but I'll try and make some connections to what I've heard in the work that I've done and just different presentations, different people who know things, and make some connections. So I think the biggest one, the first thought that came into my mind when I was thinking about what's happening in BC, even in Ontario and Tanganyika, I know they were stopping trains from going through, and just the idea of pipelines, was the concept of reconciliation that's come up over the last 4 or 5 years, and how much of a proponent Canada's been for the reconciliation process, but I don't think anyone actually knows what it means. Especially from a government's perspective. I know that there are perspectives on it from an Indigenous perspective, but I'm certain that the government has not consulted with what that means from an Indigenous perspective. And so an example of it, and I just recently heard this from a guy named Tim Thompson from Wata, which is just south of Parry Sound. So it's Mohawk territory up there. Well, they were moved there, but that's a long that's a long story about why there's Mohawk in Anishinaabeg territory. So he was talking about the great law of peace and how the Five Nations and later the Six Nations came together. And it's a story of reconciliation, really. The story goes that at one point there was so much bloodshed in the Haudenosaunee nations, there were nations at the time, not nation yet. So much bloodshed that when there would be a heavy rain, there'd be blood in the rivers. That's how bad it was. And so there came what they called the peacemaker, who kind of came from the north, and they traveled across all of these five nations to kind of bring about peace and reconciliation. And there's sort of three steps that Tim talked about and how they achieved what became the Haudenosaunee Confederacy and those five nations as one. And the first step was peace, which obviously in this case is not happening. And when we talk about peace, it's talking about stopping the cycle of trauma, right? So when somebody gets hurt, people retaliate. There's always a cycle of violence and revenge that kind of comes from trauma. And when they talk about trauma needing to stop, it's not just the intentional trauma that comes with things like war, killing, that kind of thing. It's also unintentional trauma. So when you think about the Dish with One Spoon Treaty and the wampum that was responsible for the Great Lakes, you think about why it was a spoon and not a knife to share that food. It was a metaphor for ending the unintentional trauma that could occur. So if somebody accidentally cut themselves or cut somebody else with that knife, that still counts as trauma, and therefore you've still not accomplished step one, which is peace. So I think that's really important when you think about what's happening here in Canada right now. There's still trauma going on. When you think about missing and murdered Indigenous women as well, there's still trauma occurring here in Canada. And you could argue that a lot of that trauma is still intentional, but there's also still unintentional trauma, and it all needs to stop if you're going to achieve reconciliation. The next step in the reconciliation process was what they called the new mind, and there's a lot of teachings that come about from the concept of the mind, the good mind teachings, and sort of coming up, he framed as coming up with the new perception of each other. So when nations were warring and had anger towards one another, it's sort of changing that perception and how we view each other. Again, so that's something that would need to happen in Canada as well. The view of Indigenous peoples needs to change, and at the same token, the view of Canada needs to change, and so there's actions that need to come before that, before we can kind of get to the good mind teachings, but perceptions need to change. And again, when you think about this conflict, perceptions have not changed. When you think about the coverage that the media has provided, when you think about discussions from mainstream society, things that you hear, if you look at Facebook and you look into the comments section, you can see that perception has not changed. So step two, we have not accomplished that either. And then step three, which is kind of the end goal, which they call One Nation. So that's the forming of those five nations in the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, viewing each other as related, coming together. That is the end goal of reconciliation, and that's what we'd like to see in Canada, is that one sort of unified nation. But unfortunately, when you think about events like what's going on in BC with those pipelines, like missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, we haven't even accomplished step one, which is peace and ending that trauma. So I think when I think of this, I think that we're so far away from reconciliation when you think of what's going on right now. The other thing that came to mind was the concept of hereditary chiefs. I think there is, from a non-Indigenous predominantly, but even Indigenous perspective, when you think hereditary, it kind of changes our perception of how we view that leadership. But I think it's more of a traditional leadership. They're trying to uphold some of those old natural laws that my mom was just talking about. And I think that those laws hold that leadership to a higher standard than the imposed colonial chief and council system is held to. They're just responsible for their members within their community. They're not responsible for the land. They're not responsible for creation, essentially, in the way that hereditary or traditional leadership is. And again, Tim Thompson was talking about how the traditional Haudenosaunee leadership can sometimes be in conflict with the chief and council leadership that we find in communities like Six Nations, where the traditional leadership system is very strong. There's conflict even here in Ontario. And it's because of the different standards, the different laws that they're abiding by. The colonial system is abiding by the Indian Act and the Constitution of Canada, because that's the way that system was designed. And the traditional system is adhering to natural law, the original instructions. And so there's a disconnect there. So I think it's important to understand that there's just different standards that leadership needs to uphold. And if they do not, and if the hereditary system does not uphold to those traditional standards, then they're out. There are systems in place to remove them from power quite speedily. So that's how the traditional system kind of works from an Indigenous perspective. And power is not given based on kind of where you were born. It's based on your ability to adhere to those traditional systems. And power shifts very quickly in an Indigenous setting. So I think it's important to remember that there's, I am certain, I do not understand their traditional system in depth because I'm not Wet'suwet'en, but I am certain that those traditional chiefs are in no way oppressing their people when they stand up for the land, when they try to adhere to our natural laws. And the last piece is how do I relate to this in the work that I do? So the leadership program actually came about around a time of protest as well. So I don't know if any of you remember Tina Fontaine in that case. It came out around the same time as when there was the Colton Bushi case as well, and those acquittals, and a lack of justice from an Indigenous perspective. There was a lot of anger within youth across this province. And we were struggling because we were youth ourselves, kind of going around and consulting with youth and talking about leadership. And this issue of injustice kept coming up in anger towards the state, towards Canada, towards anyone in a colonial position of power kept coming up. And we didn't know how to respond to it. How do we address this anger? Because if you tell somebody who's angry not to be angry, they're just going to get more angry. And it became less about trying to stop the anger and more about how do we channel it. And I think what we've done so far in Canada has been quite a good show of strength from an Indigenous perspective, and not, I think they have channeled their aggression or anger very well, very peacefully and assertively. So when we were thinking about how do we talk to Indigenous youth about this anger that we are feeling, we asked Negan Sinclair, who's Justice Murray Sinclair's son. He was speaking at a traditional knowledge gathering that was held at Trent University I think 2 or 3 years ago now. We asked him about this, and he reminded us of the teachings of the bear from an Anishinaabek perspective. So why would a bear stand up? That's what he said. And in particular, a mother bear. So often it's protect something, to protect its cub. And he talks about the mind of that bear. The bear is not in a state of blind rage when it stands up for something, even though it may have good reason to be. The bear is being assertive and aggressive, but never ever in a state of blind rage. And he talks about the importance of kind of keeping that logic or that good mind when you're dealing with anger. And how can we be assertive, but not necessarily in a state of blind rage, to think about the outcomes of our actions before we do them. And I think that's why in all cases, really, when Indigenous people stand up for something, it's very peaceful. We're being assertive, but we are never ever in a state of blind rage. And I think that teaching is very, very important to remember as Anishinaabek people. And I think it directly relates to the bear in the Seven Grandfather Teachings, and that bear representing courage or bravery. And how do we carry ourselves with that courage or bravery as Indigenous people without ever being in a state of blind rage? So that's how it kind of relates to the work that I do, and that's the message that we try to spread to Indigenous youth. Because as Indigenous people, there are so many reasons to be in a state of rage constantly, but it's just not healthy. We can't do it. So those are the kind of teachings that keep us strong now, but directly relate to some of those old natural laws that we are adhering to. And I think it's important to remember as we move through this time of protest and anger, personally anger as well, to try and remember some of these really important teachings that, that keep us strong. So I'll stop there, and I'll let some other people talk. Miigwech ki bzindoek. Thank you for listening.
Miigwech for listening to this podcast. And I would like to point you also to the whole suite of podcasts, which you can find on the Indigenous Environmental Justice website at York University. You can hear from all the speakers who participated on the panel on the Canadian State and Wet'suwet'en people. Also on the website, you can find further information on any other kind of activities and events that are occurring in relation to Indigenous environmental justice and the Wet'suwet'en people. Miigwech. We are.